Kaboom!
If you thought 4 hours a day, 1,200 minutes a week was enough, think again. He's the last remnants of the old republic. A sole bastion of fairness. He treats crackheads in the ghetto gutter the same as the rich pill poppers in the penthouse.
Wow.
The clearinghouse of hot takes break free for something special. The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller starts right now.
That it does, and we are in the air everywhere. The vast power of iHeart, the global reach of podcasting, as we are everywhere you can download the podcast, heard weekly, even when my tongue is all mangled. I'm such a glutton for punishment coming in here, especially having to work with David Gascon. I mean, my God, what a nightmare. But it is all part of the iHeart Podcast Network, available wherever you get your podcast. You can hear this show, and I like to give you the menu. I'm told you don't need to do this in a podcast, but what the hell? Now, normally, if this was a successful podcast, I would be reading like a Joe Rogan, like 7 minutes of commercials. There are no commercials I'm reading right now. Zero, Zippo, Bubkis. That's a bad job by you. Buy a damn commercial. Anyway, on the menu today, we have the Apology Tour. Wordy, study this, because I love that. And also we will have It's in the Bag, your questions, our answers, and Don't Stick to Sports, bizarre jambalaya of craziness from around the world, and none of them really sports stories. You will be enthralled with this show, unless you're not. I have been told by someone on Twitter that the Fifth Hour with Ben Maller is like a Norman Rockwell painting from back in the old days. It's like apple pie and baseball. It's all of those things. And Gascon, are you awake? I got to carry this show. Are you there, Gascon?
I think that's a huge compliment to me, right? Because
then I have to carry you on my back, even when my tongue is all messed up still?
You're playing this up way too much.
No, I am not. I should send out a photo of my throbbing tongue, which is in a great amount of pain. You can literally see the agony, all right? And then you will suddenly change your tune.
So has the missus put you on the injured reserve list then? That's the bigger question.
Well, she has tried to, and I have pushed back. I actually did feel better. Here's the problem, Gascon, and I have a great medical background from years of practicing medicine on radio and helping athletes, sanitize athletes, clean them up, fix athletes, and all that. But, yeah, so I typically, the way it goes is I'll feel better during the day because I'm not talking. And I'll do the usual bells and whistles, the stuff to treat it, the injury when you bite your tongue really bad. But then the problem is I go in and do the show, and then by the second segment of the overnight show, it is freaking brutal, man. It is so it's basically rinse, wash, repeat. And so I just have to batten down the hatches. Now I'm hoping that this weekend, where you know this podcast is being aired, that while that's going on, ta-da! I will have no longer the pain there, but it's quite the doohickey that I've developed here.
I don't know the origin of the story. What did you do to bite onto your tongue pretty hard?
Well, thanks for listening to the show.
I'm usually
about
asleep
it all week.
That time.
Appreciate that. Very, very loyal, very supportive. Thank you. A Sunday, my wife was working, and I made a pizza.
Oh, boy.
I like to make pizza on Sunday watching football, because that's a man's food, pizza. Pizza and football. And so I made the pie, and just like normal, nothing spectacular. I mean, there were a few issues actually making the pie because the pizza stuck to the pan, which was a pain in the ass. But anyway, I got it done, and I cut the pizza. I made it from scratch, cut it up, put a couple pieces on my plate, went, sat down to watch. This was like the early part of the late TV window. So I had the Rams game on. I had the Cardinals Seahawks. I was flipping around to a couple different games. I forget. There were a couple other ones.
Broncos, Jaguars,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Minshew Mania. Gardner Minshew, who I keep calling Gary for some reason. I don't know why. But anyway, so I'm sitting down to eat the pizza, and I bite into the pizza, and fine. Second bite, And then I made a miscalculation, and I was in deep water. My tongue was in, it just got bitten really bad, and I figured, oh, it's no big deal. I mean, what kind of wuss is upset with a bitten tongue? But I have the only job that you can have where if you have an injured tongue, it's a problem.
Well, two, you're also married, so marital needs come into play. So,
well, clearly.
That's why I was curious if your wife put you on the injured reserve list, because right now you're not doing too much. You can't slug as much as you possibly can.
Well, I'm in the injury tent. Somebody pointed out that I sound occasionally like Lou Holtz because there's a little bit of a lisp there, but it's not my fault, so I don't feel shame in that. I don't have any real vanity about that because it's an injury.
Are you purposely trying to derail the podcast? Because every week it sounds like your voice is just shitty when you first kick it off, and now you add this element. These are like different things that I have to overcome to promote this podcast, which is...
Well, there is no promotion. You do nothing. There is absolutely nothing. I know you have the Gag On parody account that you run, but other than that, I mean, what are we talking about here?
Well,
my goal is to sabotage this. Every week, how can I F up the podcast? How can I shit all over the podcast? That is my goal every week, okay? And how am I doing? Am I doing good?
I think it's kind of fair, right? Because your colleagues torpedo your show Monday through Friday, and so now you torpedo your own podcast.
Yeah. Well, I learned how to destroy a radio show from years of being a witness to the radio show being destroyed, and so I figured, why not? Why not go the other way?
Speaking of which, we got to put this out there, but I want to ask you before asking any of the listeners on this, when are we going to have our first guest, and in what kind of capacity will he or she be on the show? Are we going to get a sports figure, a coach, a political junkie, an entertainer? Like, where are we going with this next?
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, so here's the way I look at this. Now, I know that the podcast game, a lot of it is dependent on people love interviews. They love hearing famous people. There's a lot of celebrity worship and all that. I get it. I'm not much different. When I listen to certain podcasts that are in my rotation, and if I see a guest I recognize, I will be more likely to download that episode of the podcast. I understand that, but that a couple things. It's not what we normally do, but I don't mind doing the interviews here, and I think it would be good. This is the perfect format. So I'd like to bring on some people, like a wide range of people. Well, the problem is, Gascon, the second thing here is, you don't like production meetings. You're like the laziest guy in the West.
Wait, what the fuck talking about? I send you content I'll throughout the entire week that you actually use on your radio show.
No, that is a lie.
You use words and texts I send you with your opening monologue.
No, that
yes.
is incorrect.
You don't even give me credit for that.
What do you want me? You think that you're being, I'm not admiring you. You don't, no.
Yes.
No. Okay. Listen to me, Gascon. Okay. This show, this inside radio, or in this case, inside podcasting. So I roll into the studio, 3 hours of sleep, right?
You roll out of bed.
I roll into this studio that we do the podcast from. And Gascon, hey, what are we talking about today? None of that. It's totally amateur. And just wants to turn the mics on and start talking and figure it out as we go. What a minor league operation that I have to work with you. How dare you?
Budget podcasting for a budget show, right?
Wow. Unbelievable. No, hey, how's your tongue? None of that. What's up with that?
Well, because, one, I'm talking to you for the next couple of hours. Two, I'm going to see you on today. Three,
maybe
I'll be hearing.
I might call in sick.
You're not going to call in sick. You don't even call in sick during the dog days of summer. You're not going to call in sick
Maybe
right now.
I'll change my ways here. Maybe I will be pressured and bullied into calling in sick.
You got enough guys on your staff that take time off during football season. I don't think you're going to.
I know. Eddie's going to, that's a shot at Eddie, by the way. Eddie's going to Chicago. He'll miss some shows.
Didn't he go to Europe 2 years ago?
Yeah. No, he went to Europe a couple years ago, but now he's also going to Chicago for a Charger Bears game. And we're trying to have him meet Doc Mike at Connie's Pizza in Chicago.
Good call.
And Doc's got his friend Frankie. You've never met Doc Mike, have you?
No, no.
You got to meet Doc. If you go to Chicago, you got to meet this guy. What an unbelievable character. I met him one time for a few hours in Kansas City, and he doesn't even know what a podcast is, so we can rip the shit out of him. But he is bizarro world. I mean, I love the guy. He's quite a character. I don't know that I'd love him if I lived next door to him, but I don't live next door to him. And you know, he's done some of the most ridiculous stuff of any Maller militia person. Doc Mike, who's been with me longer than like 99% of the people that that call the show and whatnot, the characters on the show. And I mean, going to Michael Vick, going to Leavenworth Prison to interview Michael Vick.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah, when he was in jail. And he called me up outside Leavenworth Prison for like four nights in a row. And he kept going in thinking he was going to talk to Michael Vick, and they kept denying him because Vick didn't know who the hell he was or whatever. So that was great. The goat head thing, he called up as he was dropping off a goat head at Wrigley Field multiple times, the curse of the Billy Goat and all that. And occasionally that made national news. And one of the funniest was the old mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel. This guy, after it was Cubs opening day, and Doc Mike, such a wackadoodle, he shows up to Wrigley, and he drops the goat head off at the Cubs offices in a box, right? So the secretary of the Cubs takes the goat head. No, it was a goat head because he didn't open the box. It was for the owner of the Cubs, and then somebody in the Cubs office opened the box. And surprise, surprise, surprise. Anyway, Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago at the time, he got up on the microphone, and he looked right in the camera, and he said that the city of Chicago will use all police resources to find out who did this.
Right.
All right. We're going to spare no expense. You know, I'm giving a paraphrasing, and I was just laughing. I said, I can play the voicemail as he did it if you want. And I was like, so stupid. And even Doc was like, oh, the police don't care. They think he's stupid. They don't care. And they didn't. They never bothered.
That's like what they did with Jussie Smollett. This is something straight out of that movie Seven. Have you ever seen that movie?
No, I don't think I have.
Seven was with Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman and Kevin Spacey, and Kevin Spacey is just this serial killer, and one of his final acts is he kills Brad Pitt's wife. He was a detective at the time, David Mills, and he chops off her head, puts it in a box, and they go out in the middle of nowhere here in California, like out in the desert, and he opens up the box and sees that it is his wife's head, and she was on top of that. She was pregnant, too, so...
Oh, that's wonderful.
This is great.
Really uplifting.
That's a great movie.
It's a solid movie. Is that a kids movie?
Yes, yes.
Is that a Disney movie?
It's PG, yes. It's available on Disney, also online. You can download it anytime.
Like Bambi's mom, they cut the head off. Guillotine. Right?
That's a great move, man. Like, I got to meet Doc Mike now.
Don't you think like Walt Disney was a sick bastard? I mean, all these moms dying in movies. Who wants their mom to die? I mean, everyone loves their mom, right? I mean, come on. It's ridiculous.
How many movies?
What an asshole.
How many movies do you have a girl or a woman dying, though? Cinderella comes back from the dead.
Well, the traditional Hollywood story, damsel in distress and all that, you know, and the shining knight, the knight
Cinderella.
In shining armor riding in and all that. I mean, there's only a few different storylines. I mean, that's the odd thing about... Somebody in the movie business explained this to me many, many years ago. And he was absolutely right that there's only... I have to look up. I wrote down what they were. But there's only a few different stories that are used in Hollywood. And that's it. I mean, and so it's odd, like, the way that people write. But anyway, that's not something to talk about here.
I guess. Do you watch a lot of HBO or Showtime shows?
Not a lot. I mean, I've loved some of the stuff on HBO, but I don't I don't have a DVR right now, so I don't record a lot of stuff. So it's pretty much I have to be up watching. We have HBO on demand, so I guess I can watch stuff on there.
Yeah, but, you got HBO Go, though.
Somebody has to tell me something that's like, hey, I got to watch that.
Well, okay, so season one of True Detective was fantastic with Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. Another show that's fantastic that's ending at the start of next year is Homeland.
Uh-huh.
Claire Danes is in that. She's just she's diabolical, but she's fantastic. A lot of that show is just based on current events of today's political atmosphere, so you see a lot of crossover. But those two shows come to my mind just immediately. They jump out. They're obviously a lot different from what we see in the regular landscape of CBS and Fox and NBC with their regular programming Monday through Friday.
Yeah. No, I mean, I liked a lot of that stuff, and they try different things and whatnot. But, I mean, now with, like, YouTube, anybody can put pretty good content out, and people can get, you know, the problem is getting an audience, but anybody can do it. But anyway, all right, let's get on with the show. What do you say?
Oh, yeah, of course. On.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific.
Well, are we done with our production meeting?
This is a highly combustible situation. What's that?
I said we're done with our production meeting now, so we can move forward. And so let's push on.
What a dick. All right. The apology tour, and this is, we're starting with this only because it's plausibly sporty. And I'm told that I need to mention a little sports occasionally, because I think we told our bosses it would be a little bit about sports. But it's pretty much anything we want, I think. It's a podcast. And the numbers tell me that some people are actually listening, not many, but some. Anyway, the apology tour, who did it better? I mentioned this on the overnight program. Kirk Cousins, on his radio show on KFAN in Minnesota, apologized publicly to Adam Thielen, essentially for being bad at his job. Right, and being as exciting as a pancake with no syrup. And so, anyway, Cousins apologizing and all this stuff. And, well, I like accountability. And I did a rant about accountability and all that. This was so ridiculous, this apology by Cousins. He does this all the time. He apologizes all the time. And then he goes out and vomits all over the field. And then he comes back and apologizes again. And occasionally he'll have a good game. He won't apologize. And they'll come back and have a crappy game and shit all over the 50-yard line. and then he will announce, you know, it's no big deal, whatever. I'm sorry about it. So we had that. And then behind door number two, the Baltimore Orioles. Now, this I had not seen this one. This is a wild story. So the Baltimore Orioles, who are not only a baseball team, they are an embarrassment. All right. They aren't even close to being a competitive baseball team. They are out in the backwaters of Major League Baseball. I cannot emphasize that enough. They are so far away from even sniffing wild card contention. It's ridiculous. But the Orioles this week, in a tremendous plot twist for fan appreciation, the seven people that go to Oriole games, and season ticket holders are getting notes. Now, not all of them. They're getting handwritten thank you notes saying things like, thank you, and hang in there. I mean, how crazy is this?
I don't know, but you know what? I recommend that what we do after this podcast is over is I can go to Rite Aid or a thrifty store and buy a bunch of thank you cards, and we should get the listeners' addresses, and you should write thank you cards for your tongue. I think that would be amazing.
I should get sympathy cards for having to work with you.
I think that would be the best thing ever.
My condolences on the loss of your quality broadcasting
career.
That would
be so good. Just imagine, though, if you're a fan, would you rather go to an Orioles baseball game or go to a Miami Dolphins football game?
That's the same. It's an, you know, it's either way, you're losing. It's Sophie's choice. There's no good choice in that. But the Oriole thing, I got questions about this, right? Were these actually written by the Oriole players? Because the story made it seem like some of these came from Oriole players. Like, was this punishment? Like, remember when you were a kid and you got sent to detention in elementary school or junior high, and you had to You had to write out things as punishment. I mean, is that what the Orioles did? Or did they actually hire a firm that does this and outsource it and hire someone to write all these notes, make it seem like it came from the players? Because who would really know?
Yeah, well, it could be something like this. I don't know if you, when you were younger and you went to elementary school or even high school, if your parents would buy scripts or they'd have to do some kind of service with your elementary or high school, like community service for them, as opposed to making a donation. What if it's like this, where the Oriole players are actually writing these notes, and then in turn, they don't have to do any additional community service work?
Yeah, so the sins of being bad at baseball, that is overlooked as long as you write the note.
49 games back of first place they finished this year.
I know.
54
well, really, what, if I was Peter Angelos, I would have just had Chris Davis. I would have had him just write all the notes, and none of the other players would have had to write the notes because he's the only one making any real money in Baltimore, and he is horseshit, and has been that way ever since he signed the contract.
Yeah, but if you're Davis, do you just hire a bunch of interns and have them write something out that's legible, and you just sign your John Hancock on the bottom of it?
So anyway, just to wrap up the apology thing, so I would give the edge here to none other than the Orioles. If and this is a key caveat here and a qualifier, if the Oriole players actually were forced to really write out these letters, if that's the case, then that's better than what Cousins did. Anybody can go on a radio show and apologize. He keeps going down that rabbit hole. It's like he's living in Alice in Wonderland. He's get out of it, man.
Oh, it's so good.
Anyway, all right, Wordy. Now, I used to do this bit on the overnight show. I got rid of it, and some people are saying, why don't you do it anymore? I'll do it here. It's the fifth hour. I always say the fifth hour is for the crap we don't get to during the week, and it's, you know, leftovers with Gascon. But Wordy, word of the week. All right. Now, I read this the other day, and I was unaware of this. There is a term that is regularly used by people like myself, sportscasters, that is an homage to Michael Vick's favorite sport, dogfighting. It has become part of our language. Did you know this, Gascon?
No.
Like, for example, this weekend, the Washington Redskins are 15.5-point underdogs against the Patriots, right? I mean, that's a big point spread, yes?
Yes, it's huge.
Right, so they are the underdog, right?
Yes.
That term, underdog, comes from the language of dogfights. Did you know that?
I did not know that, no.
Yeah, the term underdog originally was used in the lexicon in the late 19th century, and it was related to dogfights. And what would happen in those fights, they would obviously pit two dogs, and two dogs would attack each other, and whoever lost, whichever dog was declared the loser, was termed the underdog because they were under the other dog who was eating them. And the winner was called what? Was called top dog. So both those terms, underdog and top dog, are a tribute to the dog fighting era back in the late 19th century in the United States. I thought that was interesting.
Have you ever been to a dog fight?
I have not. I've seen when the Michael Vick stuff was going on. I went on YouTube, and it was the early days of YouTube. Oh, and I remember watching some dog fights from like the Philippines or somewhere like that. I forget where, but they
Mexico.
Might have been Mexico, but I watched. I've never been at one in person. You probably run a dog fighting ring in your backyard.
Could you imagine? Could you absolutely?
I could imagine you doing.
Would you? Well, have you ever been to a bullfight?
How would I be to a bullfight? I've never been to Europe. How would I go to a bullfight?
That's right. I forgot.
I do a bullshit fight every night on the radio. I know that. Your nickname is bullshit.
Oh, man. Would you ever condone any kind of fighting, whether it's a dog, a cockfight, whatever it may be?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not. I love animals and all that stuff, but I'm not against. I wouldn't go out of my way for it, but if it was presented to me, I mean, I would check it out of curiosity and all that. But the running of the bulls. Why have you not done that, Gascon? Why have you not run with the bulls in Pamplona?
I've actually considered that. I wanted to do that a handful of years ago in Spain, but I didn't get a chance to.
You should do it. And just stand in front of the bull and see what happens.
I had
just have a screw loose and stand in front of the bull and see what happens.
I'm afraid I'm going to blow a hamstring while I'm trying to run And then as soon as I do, it's just gourd, 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 and then it's game over.
But what a way to go out.
Yeah,
what
it actually happens in the middle of July, too. So it could be on the menu for next year.
You should be like that, toughen up, man. You're going to be like that woman at the, was it the Bronx Zoo? Or I think it may have been Brooklyn. Did you see that story this week?
I did. Actually, yeah, I think I sent it to you. Yeah, I did send
I sent it to you. The woman standing in the lion's den.
Literally.
And the daring the lion to eat her for lunch or like a snack. And you should be more like that. That's a tough woman. Crazy. But she's got brawn. Not brains, but she's got brawn.
Oh, man. How much would you have to be paid or do the running of the bulls, Ben?
Well, number one, I don't run. I fast walk on the treadmill.
Is that what you do in the gym?
I do a lot of cardio on the... Well, I mean, I don't know, running. I'm more like a jog than a run, but...
You've abandoned your 1,000 steps a night. I know that.
Yeah, I have, well, more, 10,000, way over 10,000. I mean, I'm in these competitions. I have this, this app with my fitness device, and so I'm very competitive, and I... It's a bad thing because I walk a lot more than I should because whoever at the end of the week gets the most steps is declared the winner. And so I want to win. And it's so stupid. It's so dumb. And I'm in there with like people that run fitness classes in some of these contests. And I'm like, what am I doing?
What's wrong with that?
Well, I sit on my ass for 4 hours a night and spit out nonsense with a broken tongue, and they're out there in cardio, doing cardio every day for work.
Well, that's exactly why you should be competing.
Away.
That's exactly why you should be competing.
All right, shut up.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Let's get to study this. You want to do study this?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, let's move on with the fifth hour with Ben Maller, and I'm told you don't need to say that, but what the hell. Study this. Bring on the meats. An international group of researchers, not just America, but around the world, has discovered that decreasing red meat consumption, which I've been told pretty much the last 20 years, does not improve health. As it turns out, our current processed and unprocessed red meat consumption levels are actually, according to the study, just fine. It's a brand new study. It says the average American man knows after... actually, that's not the one. This is about the red meat one. But I will say that was what we call a screw-up. Well, that'll be edited out in the podcast, yes?
Yes, absolutely it will be. Mark
all right, anyway, all right, so... So study this as far as the red meat thing. So essentially, we're fine. Eat as much meat as you're eating right now. Now, I don't know, first of all, if this is true or not. I mean, who knows, right? This could be complete nonsense and it could be debunked. But I've always lived my life. I love these studies. That, you know, that's why we do this segment, Study This. And I look for these things because I find them interesting. But... these things change. Like, 1 year, there'll be a study, don't drink coffee, it'll kill you. And then 5 years later, a different independent study, think tank, will say, no, you got to drink a cup of coffee a day. You'll live till you're 95 years old, and you'll be perfectly healthy. You'll have wonderful blood and all that stuff. So nobody knows anything is essentially my position on this, Gascon. So pretty much do what you want within reason, right? Within reason.
Yeah, we've been like that with what? Alcohol. We've been like that with eggs. I know it was eggs and then egg whites for the longest time, talking about the impact of cholesterol, talking about that with wine. I mean, steak has to be. Do you eat steak a lot or at least chicken?
I only eat a couple meals during the week, and usually one of them is, both of them actually are somewhat meat-related, so that's pretty much my entire diet. I don't really eat that much, and so I try to get as much protein or whatever as I can when I eat. So, but again, I mean, I live my life by the philosophy nobody knows anything. Which I also think it was a movie years ago in the early 2000s, I believe. I don't think I saw the movie, but I remember seeing the headline saying, I use that line all the time. I can't believe they made a movie about it.
But see, your consumption of meat has come down tremendously over the last 10 to 15 years when you were living on the West Side, right?
what are you referring to?
asshole. Because you said you'd eat a ton of fast food.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
What do you think I was referring to?
I don't know. I mean, I thought you were making some kind of a joke about something. I don't know. But
you loved Tito's. Loved a couple other places that we'd go to. And you just said you were like 400 pounds.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I would eat, you know, three meals a day, and they were all fast food. And I'd hit 7-Eleven for some snacks and have my Mr. Big Gulp and all that crap. And so, yeah, I mean, I have cut down my food consumption a lot. And so that has absolutely happened. And then, you know, the real kicker, like, I'm doing this in part because I want to lose weight. And I think I've lost a lot doing this. The other thing, the reason I'm doing this intermittent fasting is because I read online that it'll help reverse some of the bad effects from being, big fat ass all these years. So I'll see if that actually happens. If not, I will write a book saying, essentially, fuck these intermittent fasting situations and all that.
But you also, you're big boned, you're tall, right? You're what, 6'5", 6'6"?
Yeah, something like that.
So, I mean, you need all the help you can get with the intermittent fasting because it adds to some clarity, it cleans up your diet, which is what you
said. Well, they say that after 16 hours, your body goes into ketosis, I believe
yes.
that's the term. And then you'll lose weight. I don't know, that could, again, be bullshit. But I read it, and I believe it, because I read something, I believe it. And it actually has proven true for me. It's rung true for me. It's not some kind of fish story. But I know a lot of people are like, I don't want to live my life and not eat every 5 hours or whatever. I mean, what kind of life is that? I don't disagree. Trust me, I love eating. I blame the aging process also.
Well, yeah, you're on the other side of 50. You'd have to worry about that. I mean,
that's a lie.
We're looking forward
you're a liar.
To, can we do
liar,
a
liar,
special
liar,
edition of the
fire.
Fifth Hour with Ben Maller post-colonoscopy? That's what we should do. Post-colonoscopy.
Yeah. That'd be great. Why don't I give you a colonoscopy? How about that, Gascon? Yeah? That'd be a boondoggle, wouldn't it? Yeah. I'd take my sweet time also, by the way. I'd do that.
Bring Doc Mike over to the west side, Ben Maller colonoscopy. Get the gang together. That'd be
great. That'll be coming up in the sixth hour with Ben Maller. Coming to a podcast near you. A new study says that the average American man knows after 7 months of dating if his partner is the one.
Bullshit.
Yeah, I agree. I knew pretty much right away. I was like, when I met my wife, I was like, oh man, she's beautiful. She's out of my league. What am I doing here? So I was like, I wonder if there's a chance. I wonder if I got a shot here. And it worked out. But I knew pretty much within an hour and a half or 2 hours or whatever. Maybe the second date, because the first date, if it goes well, this is my experience when I was dating. Sometimes I'd have good first dates, and then the second one would go to hell. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
And so you got to get a couple of dates in till you're like, oh, this person seems pretty cool. But the other problem with dating is everyone puts up a bullshit front at the beginning. You know, everyone's phony. Everyone's fake. No one farts around each other. Everyone's clean. No one leaves their trash around. So you have to be with someone a little bit to find all their, the normal things that we all do, that we're all a bunch of pigs. And so that takes a little bit of time. But I don't think it's 7 months. But you, Gascon, apparently it's your entire life because you haven't found anybody.
No, that's a little bit different.
That's a cheap shot.
No, I can identify right away if she's a keeper or not. I'm sure the missus probably had to wait things out with you real quick to see where you'd be at. Where did you take her on your first date, by the way?
We were in Pasadena.
Great
city. She used bait and switch on me because I had agreed we were going to go see a movie because I loved going on dates to movies because I didn't have to talk to
anybody. You don't have to talk at all. You don't have to see her, to her.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
And as an introvert, I love that because I don't have to talk. I can say I'm on a date and I'm watching the movie eating popcorn. I mean, that's a great date.
It's kind of an asshole thing to do if you want to get to know somebody. Let's go on a date and go to a movie.
Apparently that's why it didn't work out. So I met her at the movie theater in Pasadena, Old Town Pasadena, right there on Colorado Boulevard.
Yeah.
And in that shopping mall there. I met her there, and then she said, well, why don't we go get something to eat or whatever? I forget it. Maybe she showed up a little late, or I showed up late, and the movie had already kind of started. So we went to get something to eat at a bar right across the way there, and we never actually saw the movie. We just kind of hung out, and I remember what movie it was, but we talked, and it went well.
So she forced you to talk. Because you two have completely different personalities.
Over like a beer or something. A couple of beers or whatever, if I remember correctly.
And then how long did you guys date until you dropped the knee?
Not that long. I mean, it was probably maybe six, seven months or something like that, maybe.
Wow.
I don't know the exact timeline of that, but it was not, like, it wasn't even a year.
And wow. You were ready to get married
There were mitigating factors that were a reason part of that, but I mean, we kind of expedited the process for some reason. But I mean, we hurried it up. So
that's impressive. I remember going on a date with this woman in San Diego, and it was after she got over a relationship, after I was getting over a relationship, and she was smoking hot. And she was a friend of a friend, so I went on a date with her. We went to dinner, had a casual conversation, and left it at that. And I thought, okay, you know, she lives in San Diego, I live in LA. Long distance, it's gonna be a little bit of a hassle to get down there. I got invited the next time to hang out with her for her 30th birthday. And Ben, I kid you not, she didn't get into one. She got into two and then three fist fights that night on her 30th birthday. Ben, she was throwing haymakers. She was throwing bottles of champagne. Her top came off twice when we were in a club. It was all out chaos. I had to drive home from San Diego at like 3 a.m, and I could not get the hell out of there fast enough.
So you learned that she is a Mr. Hyde drunk, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's like four kinds of people that drink. There's the Hemingway, doesn't change anything. The Mary Poppins gets actually happier and nicer,
yeah,
and I love you. The Nutty Professor that becomes more social if you're like an introvert like me. And then there's Mr. Hyde, who is hostile and wants to fight everyone after they become intoxicated. And you met this woman and she was like that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've gone through a gamut of those where they'll either fight, they'll pass out because they drink too much, they'll throw up all over themselves.
Oh, yeah. I dated a girl one time that was the barfer, and that was really, that was disgusting. I mean, I don't know what she was just, she had one hand, she had scotch, the other hand, she had whiskey, and the third hand, she had bourbon. But my God,
yeah,
brutal.
See, I felt so annoyed that she actually did this to me that I kept hanging out with her on a regular basis just to hang out with her when she got hammered. And every time she did get hammered and threw up, I'd take cell phone pictures of her and send it to her the next day. Yeah, so I'd be like, she'd ask the rhetorical question, like, how bad was it? I'd say, why don't you go check your cell phone? And then bang, all of a sudden she's like, I can't believe you just did that. You know, face on the toilet seat, barfing, hair is covered in vomit. It was great.
Well, you should be like Warner Wolf. Let's go to the videotape. All right, study this. What's next? Stanford researchers estimate that if you haven't tried sushi by the time you're 39 years old, there is a 95% chance you never will. And I agree with this because I have never tried sushi, and I have no plans at all to try sushi. So I think this is true, at least for me.
Well, are you a fish guy, though?
No. When I was a kid, my mom fed me a diet of tuna fish sandwiches and fish sticks and salmon. But no, as an adult, I hate it.
All right.
I ate too much of it as a kid.
So you don't eat salmon, you don't eat shark, you don't eat lobster or
No.
Shrimp and stuff?
What is the term for someone that doesn't partake in seafood? Is there a term for that?
Carnivore.
I know if you only eat seafood, it's a pescatarian, right? They call it that. But I don't know what the opposite term would be.
Carnivore. I don't know.
Carnivore. Yeah, there you go. Carnivore.
I don't know.
But I think this is true. I mean, because, you know, sushi seems to be something that you would do when you were, you know, in your 20s
or when you date.
College or
I think it's more
dating.
Yeah, it's more of a dating entree.
Yeah. And some people are part of the sushi cult, and it's to each their own, but it's not for me. It's like the whole coffee thing. I don't drink coffee. I don't need to. And I'm at the point now where why would I drink coffee? Because it's a conversation starter. I go to parties. I've never had a cup of coffee. People are like, what kind of asshole are you?
Yeah, you don't like talking to people. So it usually goes hat in hand, right?
Well, I have to have something to talk about, though.
You always have something to talk about.
Not really. A recent study that surveyed more than 2,500 adult Americans found that 77% of people always give tips to restaurant servers. 77%. That means almost 25% don't. But the number, they say, drops with food delivery people dramatically with people like, you know, the Uber Eats and the and whatnot, and also the taxi drivers,
yeah,
as well, and Uber.
I think it goes with the shaming. If you can see the person that's providing you a service, then you're more often than not gonna leave a tip. But with Uber and Lyft, you don't see the driver after they drop you off, so you're not compelled. You're not looking at them. They're not looking at you, looking for that extra tip. I'll say this much too, Ben. Going to San Francisco and I eat in the city, I don't tip anymore.
Oh, you don't?
No, because San Francisco is one of those cities that charges a percentage of your bill as a tax, and they do that in order to pay for your waiters and waitresses. So they circumvent the wage that they provide for their employers by having you pay it through a tip and a tax.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Now, when you're in San Francisco, do you also shit on the street like the locals?
No, I avoid the shit and I avoid the syringes. Yeah.
Because they say when in Rome, do as the Romans do. When in San Francisco, if they're all shitting and there's feces all over the street, you might as well join the party, right? That's the proper decorum.
You got to be careful.
In parts of San Francisco.
You're going to trigger a lot of people in the Bay Area if you talk like that anymore.
Nah, they know they got a problem, man. And my guys, we got a lot of Bay Area listeners. We do very well in San Francisco and that region. And people they like the frankness. And I think a lot of people agree. They like these politicians are just a bunch of assholes. This is a shithole all of a sudden. It's a beautiful city, San Francisco. But what are you doing?
Oh, it's just bad here in L.A., though, too.
Well, it's terrible in Los Angeles too. It's horrible.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're shitting on the streets as much. But maybe they are. I don't know. I have no idea.
Deep dive next week.
What's that?
Deep dive next week.
We'll do a full in-depth investigation. We'll go out to Skid Row and we'll do the podcast from Skid Row. All right. A new study says blank has the slowest speed when it comes to drive-through service. Who do you think it is? Gascon? Slowest fast food restaurant for service.
Oh, I'd say McDonald's.
No, McDonald's is known for being pretty quick.
No.
It's a bad job by you.
There's so many to choose from, but yeah, I was going to say McDonald's just because they're so busy.
McDonald's. I think that's the only one you have in your head. That's why you said McDonald's.
No, I had Chick-fil-A.
According to this study, the answer is Chick-fil-A. That Chick-fil-A is the slowest at giving you your food, and when you're in the fast food drive-through lane, according to this new study, they found out that Chick-fil-A has the slowest lines with an average time of about 5 minutes and 23 seconds.
I can live with that. But see, the Chick-fil-A's that I've been to don't have drive-throughs, and the other ones that are like in San Bernardino and Corona, they have the dual drive-throughs where you have two tellers, you have two ways to order. And so you get double the traffic, but they get you in and out. I mean, it's pretty much like In-N-Out. In-N-Out, next to our studio, it usually has a line that's a quarter of a mile deep, especially like at 9, 10 o'clock at night. Those lines are long.
Yeah, I mean, but I've been in that line at that In-N-Out in the valley there, and it is exhausting at times. I mean, it's all the way out to the street.
Yeah.
I mean, it's punishment is what it is. But here's my theory as a veteran of eating fast food. Let me give you some frankness here. But I used to eat it all the time. And I learned that if you go in rush hour, it's going to go quicker. If you're a nighttime eater, if you make a foodie run, one of my listeners in the Bay Area there, Marcus in Oakland, he was on the air earlier this week, Gascon. And in the middle of our conversation was ordering some burritos at Taco Bell because he had the munchies. But if you go after, say, like midnight, one of these overnight drive-thrus, you are going to have to wait because the food's not prepared. It's going to take them time to cook the food. They got to find some spit to put in the food. And so it becomes problematic. That's my theory.
I'm good with that. And I'll give you a pro tip, too. If you ever eat fast food and you do eat it in your car, especially In-N-Out, leave the wrappers and the packages in your car overnight. Because the aroma from In-N-Out is fantastic when you get in your car first thing in the morning.
Wow.
What's wrong with that?
All right. You like the smell of gasoline also? You like that?
Actually, I do like the smell of gasoline.
I do. I actually like it too. All right. Now, what do you feed? Do you have a dog or a cat? No, you're not an animal person, right?
No, I used to have a dog, but no, not anymore.
The dog died and you said that's it.
Yeah.
But There's a study out that says dog owners are paying 300% more to buy organic and vegan dog food.
For fuck's sake.
What kind of asshole? I mean, you deserve to pay 300% more. It's a dog, okay? The dog will eat anything and will lick anything. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Right? The dog doesn't know what organic and vegan is and all this. I mean, I know you're trying to do the right thing. You want the dog to live forever, but spoiler alert, doesn't matter. Dog's got a lifespan. Maybe it'll live an extra year or two, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah, my sister feeds her dog shredded chicken. She just makes it like she does with her dinner and then just cuts it all up and feeds the dogs that way. But organic, no, sir. No chance in hell. Well, that's another
now,
scam.
Now, do you allow, when you had the dog, maybe your sister does this, do you allow the dog to lick the plate when you're done with the plate?
No, never.
I never did this until I met my wife. My wife is a big advocate of dog licking plates. And so it's now become a tradition in the Mallor Mansion. When we get done with the meal, if we don't finish everything, we let the dog get the leftovers and lick the plate.
All right. Yeah. Now it makes sense because there's a drop on your show where you say that dog's licked that whole plate.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what that's what we do here. And we have a very nice dishwasher. We didn't go cheap on that. And so we make sure that thing is in extreme heat to get all those dog germs off the plate and all that stuff. I wash it twice. I wash those plates. I'm the dishwasher in the house.
Yeah.
I wash those plates twice.
I've never heard someone rave about their home appliances as much as you have. Dishwasher, barbecue, yeah. Refrigerator.
Yeah.
Like, I get it,
yeah.
Man. Like,
I'm a very suburban,
yeah,
man. When I lived in the city, I didn't even have a refrigerator.
Yeah, you're very upper class. We get it. White collar Ben Mallard
on
the show, yes.
All right, well, one final thing in this portion of the podcast here, the study this portion, which is my favorite part of the podcast, but is that I read this. It's not really a study, but it's a scientifical. They say that every year, blank tons of moose roadkill are salvaged in Alaska and eaten. How many tons of moose roadkill per year do they scoop up off the streets in Alaska?
Did you say tons?
Tons.
10 tons.
No. According to the study, or the research rather, approximately 110 tons of moose roadkill. How much does the average moose weigh? They must weigh a ton, right? I mean, not literally a ton, but close to a ton. I mean, they must weigh, how many pounds do you think a moose is? A big fat moose, an Alaskan moose.
They say an average male weighs anywhere from about 840 to 1,500 pounds.
Well, there you go. All right, there you go. So, it's, you know, you have 1,500, but you figure how many moose die on the road. And that's good.
That's a lot of shit.
Well, it's a lot of, well, it's not moose shit. It's moose, dead moose flesh.
No, yeah. No, I know.
But can you, I always thought of that the cliche is like below the Mason-Dixon line, you know, somewhere in the dirty South, they're eating roadkill, you know, that's the cliche and all that. But in Alaska, which it can't get much more further north than Alaska, and they're eating roadkill.
So 110 tons?
110.2 tons of moose roadkill approximately are salvaged from Alaskan roads to be eaten.
That's just quick math. That's over 220,000 pounds. That is unreal.
That can't be right. That must be wrong.
I guess the bigger question is now, what do they do with it after?
I would have to fact check that. I read that, but that must not be. That seems like too much, doesn't it? I know Alaska is a very large place, but you know, I don't know. All right, it's in the bag. These are actual questions by actual listeners. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, let's go. Are the questions better than last week?
Slightly.
Okay.
Slightly better. I think these all came from Facebook. And the email, you can send a question in, but no one's doing that. Matt, the Bears fan, Matt writes in, and I'm not sure what city he's in. He didn't say, but where was your first radio job and how long did you work there? That's the question. Well, thank you, Matt. I get asked this from time to time. Now, the first radio job that I had was unpaid. I was worked at the college radio station at Saddleback College, KSBR. And we kept you jazzed commercial-free in South Orange County. And we played Basha, Cruisin' for a Bruisin', and we had Branford Marsalis and all these jazz, smooth jazz performers back in those days that we would play. But my first paying job in radio was at the mighty 690 in San Diego. I started as an intern. I was an intern for a few months, and they hired me. And I started out as a guy that would get, I would do production. I did that. I was an engineer, a board op, as they call it in the radio jargon. And then I got hired as a reporter. And I lasted at the Mighty 690 from, I forget the exact, I think it was three years I was there. And then I got transferred to a station from San Diego to Los Angeles, and then I was at that station, and then eventually I came to Fox Sports Radio. But that was my first paying gig, so I lasted about 3 years, but technically I didn't get fired. I just moved on to another thing, and I've always had, like, side work. What about you, Gagon, your first radio gig?
It's funny you say that, because my first radio gig was actually at the same studio that you were at, but it was relabeled as Extra Sports 1360. Now, my circumstances were different because I got out of grad school, and then I was doing postgraduate work in Los Angeles, all unpaid, and then my first job a year later was at 1360, and just like you, I was a board op. They hired me as a board op working part-time, $10 an hour, 29 hours a week. So, Ben, I didn't leave the house. I had no cable. So I would stay in the station all day and all night watching sports and keeping up with the Joneses. I would stay there all day and all night. And then I finally got some on-air opportunity 6 months into the job. And then I won't forget this, but it was my 13th month there at iHeart down in San Diego. And I got this huge letter from the general manager of the building. Her name's Melissa Forrest. I think she's still down there. And she said, congratulations. Someone vouched for you for a raise. We appreciate your efforts. We appreciate your performance. We're going to give you a raise. It was a whopping 10% raise. I kid you not. It went from $10 to $11 in bed. I was working my ass off all day, all night. The station said they had no money, which was total bullshit. And then 20 months from the day I started, I got moved up here to Los Angeles and started working for Fox Sports Radio. So
the rest is a nightmare.
Well, it was a brutal start, man. It was wild. My first on-air opportunity, believe it or not, I was the game day host of the San Diego State Aztecs. I was doing a game
Christmas.
No
way, really?
Yeah, I was doing a game for Christmas. And Ben, the exact play that happened when I hit the air was Raheem Moore getting burned by Joe Flacco over the top in the AFC divisional round when the Broncos lost at home to the Baltimore Ravens. I could
you
not
still
forget
remember.
It. Yeah, I was because we actually had televisions in our studio, unlike yours, and I was watching that play as I was on radio, and it was unbelievable. It was a surreal moment.
Yeah. We both have ties to San Diego State. One of my first board op jobs was San Diego State men's basketball.
Oh.
And I ran the board for the Aztecs, and they farmed the Aztecs were so bad in those days, they farmed the games out to Kogo in San Diego. So I was technically working for Kogo, even though I was in the Mighty 690. It was a sister station and all that.
Right.
And I don't want to get into it here because I'm going to get bogged down, but I had the single worst performance ever by a radio engineer. And it's amazing that I've still worked in the business. I destroyed a college basketball radio broadcast. I'll have to remind me down the line. We'll do a whole podcast dedicated to our fuck ups. Okay, we'll do that. Yes,
we can do that definitely.
All right, moving on. Chris in Hagerstown, Maryland says, how much List Radio are you planning on the fifth hour? Gascon, that's your department. Go.
Listen, we don't do List Radio. The List Radio is set for the opening monologues of certain shows Monday through Friday between 11 and 3 o'clock Pacific. And that's usually when we cook up a couple different things. We make it into a nice stew or put a little topping on a pizza. Or put it in, we bake a pie. That's
make
usually
a peppermint patty.
Yeah, peppermint patty. Like we can do that.
Yeah. Now the List thing. Now you of course are the Godfather of List, but it does work. Like Cowherd does that shtick a lot.
But he's on television though.
Yeah, I mean, but I know why they do it because, and I was telling, you know, it's like the story this week we talked about on the radio show about Allen Iverson's all upset because he was not on the list of Bleacher Report had their top 50 NBA players or whatever, and he was all upset. And I always get a kick out of that because the whole reason to make a list is to create controversy. It's artificially creating contrived outrage.
Right.
That's why you do a list. And so you know, Cowherd's a master at this. A lot of these guys in radio, are that's their shtick. It's not my shtick, but it's a lot of their shtick. And it plays well because I don't know if it's we're all wired the same way, but people get frustrated and annoyed if they see a list and they don't agree with the list. And they have to correct the list. And so if I was good at this, I would not steer away from list, but I usually do. My plan originally was to have list radio with you, but or in the podcast, a segment of nothing but list, but you have pushed back on that. That's a bad job by you.
Do you think we could get away with that for one segment? We can do maybe 20 or 30 minutes and just straight list radio?
Oh, yeah. Oh, we could absolutely do that. Top five NFL coaches right now. Go. You know. Belichick's one. Who's two?
We can do Kyle Shanahan. We can do Sean McVay. We can do Pete Carroll. We can do. Yeah. You're not going to say Jason Garrett. You could say
John
Sean Payton.
Harbaugh always has good teams on there, right?
Sean Payton.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
That's more about Drew Brees to me, but yeah, Sean Payton. He annoys me. I'm annoyed by him. He bitched so much after the NFC Championship game. He's on my shit list.
They got fucked. That's why he's bitching about
fucked.
It.
They lost the game. Bunch of freaking cowards. The New Orleans Saints. What a gutless football team. They deserve to lose. Keep your composure, asshole. It was a tie game. All right? It was a tie game. And at that point, they had a three-point lead, right? I believe they had a three-point lead.
They did, but it would have been first down and goal to go inside the
10-yard
line.
Doesn't matter. You have a great defense. You're at home, and everyone's eating gumbo and jambalaya and all that stuff, having a wonderful time. No one can go in there in that pit of vipers in New Orleans and come out a winner. And you play like a bunch of weaklings and allow the Rams and Jared fucking Goff to go down the field and get in the field goal range. And then in the overtime, your Hall of Fame quarterback decides to puke all over the field, throws an interception like a pile of gelatinous goo, and the Rams go down and win the game. You deserve to lose that game, Sean Payton. Screw you.
Well, there you go. There's your top five list of NFL coaches here in 2019.
All right. Shane in Australia writes in, we have an international reach on this podcast.
There's one.
Shane's a longtime Mattler Militia guy. He says, is it okay to drink for 3 days straight with your mates without speaking to your missus in that time? All right, you want to go first on this, Gascon? So you just go on a bender for 3 days and don't talk to your lady friend.
Well,
allowed or not allowed?
I think it's allowed as long as you're texting. Does that still count as talking to your mate or no?
In the modern world, that does count as talking.
Okay, so if you're going 3 days without talking to her, you better have a pretty damn good excuse. Like you're blacked out drunk, or you got a side piece that you need to give attention to for 3 days, and you can just tell her, like, hey, I lost my phone was stolen, whatever it is, I couldn't communicate with you. You better have a damn good excuse. Otherwise, yeah, it's not, you can't justify that.
Well, in America, but maybe in Australia or Europe or somewhere else in the world, you can get away with it. But
no.
My experience in America is you cannot get away with it. That you will have hell to pay. And there will be people that are very upset with you, and it'll be a pain in the ass. So why bother, right?
Well, when you go on trips and it's only guys, how frequently do you talk to the missus?
I'll check in with her once a day or whatever. Maybe text her occasionally, but you know, it's not all the time. I mean, I don't even go on guy trips much anymore. I don't go anywhere. I just stay home. That's pretty much what I do. I'm a homebody.
That's a pretty ballsy plan, though, to go 3 days drinking on a binge and not talk to your girl. I like that move.
Yeah. You better be Rico Suave in the bedroom to get away with that one, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you're loaded, if you're great in the sack, you can get away with those certain things. So if you're not, then you're going to be shit out of luck. She'll probably be cheating on you anyway. So.
All right. Now, Matt from Fort Royal, Virginia. You ever been to Fort Royal, Virginia?
No, I've never been to Virginia.
Great place on God's green earth. And Matt says, can you teach Gagon how to park? So, guess what? We should do this on the podcast. I can actually teach you how to park. You don't know how to park. You're terrible. You're an embarrassment.
Listen, I'm
so probably, Matt wants me to help you. Are you willing to take my help? I will teach you how to park.
Well, we can't use your car to be teaching me how to park because your car is small. You have a lot of blind spots.
What?
Your tires
blind
are
spots would make it hard to park, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So we can't use your car. We can use my car. It's a high performance sports high utility vehicle. You have no blind
gas
spots.
Gas guzzler.
Oh, it might
you're
be a hit, gas
you're hurting
guzzler.
The environment.
Well,
you're
whatever.
Leading
We're all
going to
die anyway. Whatever.
Global warming and all that.
You get some of those people that are fanaticals. That's right. No, I'm a great driver. I'm probably one of the best drivers I know.
Well, you don't know many people.
I know a lot of people.
Not really.
I know a lot of the same people you know.
No, you don't.
A lot of those people that are high up in the food chain, the executives.
you don't know them at all. You think you know them, but you don't know. There's a divide. Separate and divide between me and you.
Oh, yeah. There's a huge...
Yeah. You know what your nickname is? The Bad Apple. That's your nickname.
Man, if I get that reputation, it's lights out.
All right. So I guess, Matt, the answer is he does not want help parking. Colin the electrician. I don't know where Collins is. He didn't say what city he's in. But do you think that the NFL should just do away with the reviewable pass interference penalties already? Colin obviously does. He thinks it's a waste of time and whatnot. This is a sporty question, but I put it in here. I'm not for the new setup, the reviewable pass interference penalties, because my experience the first 4 weeks of the NFL season is almost never do they actually overturn the call. My theory on this is that the officials are pushing back, fighting back against the machine of the NFL, and only 1% are going to be overturned. The most egregious pass interference penalties, this is 99%. It doesn't matter. It's a waste of time. We're not going to overturn the call. Don't do it. Even though it is technically reviewable, it's not worth your time.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm on the same page. It's like reviewing balls and strikes in Major League Baseball. I mean, umpires miss calls all the time. Same thing with fouls in the NBA. Every play in the National Football League, you can call a penalty for something, whether it's holding, pass interference for offense, pass interference for defense. There's a lot of blown calls for roughing the passer that are called against certain teams, and they're going after the quarterback. I think there's just way too much in terms of instant replay that's used in today's game. Obviously, it's drummed up for controversy. It helps for ratings when we're talking about this on a Monday or a Tuesday. I want to get rid of it.
Yeah, I don't like it. I mean, it's I know we talk about a lot of these controversies on radio shows and podcasts and whatnot, but it does annoy me. Now, fortunately, I turn around. I'll just go to a different game when they go to replay. I'm like, I don't really care that much. I'll go to another game, but it is annoying. It is the fifth hour. It's in the bag. Do we have any more here? Let's see. Daniel had an interesting idea. Daniel works at Walt Disney World, and he said, should the NFL have just 1 week, say after week 8, where the entire NFL goes on hiatus rather than have teams stagger their bye weeks after 3 weeks and over the next, 8 weeks or something like that?
Yeah.
Bye weeks. But, the way I would answer it, I think that's actually not a bad idea, but the NFL wants to have content every week. They make a deal with television, so I don't think they'll actually do that. But it's not wild. I mean, everyone would have the same. No one would have an advantage, because right now, if you have your bye week late in the year, traditionally you want to have it as late as you can because that gets you refreshed for the home stretch, right?
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to be a team that has to play, because you get a lot of teams that play Thursday night football and then they have their bye week following it, or they have the bye week before their Thursday night football affair. So they have a little bit more leniency on the days off and whatnot. But like you mentioned, CBS, Fox, ESPN, NFL Network, that's their moneymaker for the entire calendar year. The highest television ratings come into play during the fall. That's the National Football League, that's the NFL, and then 10 times again. Sunday Night Football for NBC, it's huge. There's no way you'd want to cut that off for 1 week to have them all go dark, because, frankly, the college product isn't as good, or it's nowhere close to what the National Football League provides.
Yeah. So, I mean, in theory, it sounds fine, but I don't think Daniel... there's a chance.
Plus,
man,
we play fantasy football. Would you want to go dark for a week playing fantasy football?
I go dark every week. What are you talking about?
Oh, boy.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, boy.
Well, dark humor is what I...
Oh, all right.
What do you think, pervert? All right. Don't stick to sports. This is your Department Gascon here. One more thing. This is actually not a sports story.
Right.
I hate the one more thing. I read this week, and again, this might be bullshit, but I read that at the Alien Telescope Array, or Allen Telescope Array, rather, in California, like an alien, astronomers, I guess is what they call it. Is that the term? I think that's the term. Anyway, this telescope in California, they have champagne with them at all times in the refrigerator. Now, why is that, Gascon?
In case they find a new star and they could name it?
No, in case they find alien life. They have a bottle of champagne in the fridge to pop the bottle of champagne to celebrate that they found Martians.
Now, what do they do? Do they do like a post, they do an overnight party at Area 51, the place that we can't go to after in celebration, and talk to the guys and our military?
Yeah. Well, they should go to Pahrump, Nevada, where Art Bell used to work from overnight on the coast to coast, because that's, I always think of aliens, I think of Pahrump, Nevada.
Oh.
All right, let's get to your stories of the week. What do you have?
Yeah, let's do stories? This. Have you ever been body shamed before?
Oh yeah, well, being a fat person, yeah, you're body shamed all the time. When I was younger, people, even now, people are assholes and say nasty things, and that's just how it works, and it's how they were raised by their parents. You know,
that's so true. Well, check this out: a Texas woman found out that she was being body shamed online by a potential employer. The company, it's a startup company named Kick-Ass Masterminds, and the woman's name's Emily Chow. What happened was she actually applied for an internship at the company, and actually a couple other companies as well. But what they did, after following her account on Instagram, they screen captured a couple pictures, and one in particular where she was in a bikini. And they posted it inside their company portal saying, hey, you know, if you want to apply for a job, it's in your best interest that if you're looking to do something like this, don't have all your social media out there so your potential employers can look at that stuff.
Oh, so they were using her as an example?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the way to go. But that's not the worst. I thought you were going to say something else. So they were, was she fat or something like that?
No, she's actually really attractive. She's in fantastic shape.
Well, then who the hell cares?
For a marketing company, right? There's only a handful of things that men look at online that come to marketing, and it plays right into what we do for television.
If she's not an ugly duckling or something like that, and she doesn't look like Joseph Merrick. You know who Joseph Merrick is?
Yeah, but she's, yeah.
The Elephant Man. If she doesn't look like the Elephant Woman, Josephine Merrick, then so who the hell cares? Get over it,
man. Yeah. Speaking of which, getting over it, a teacher in Florida was down on her luck, and in fact, the cost of living for her in Florida was pretty hard. So she actually turned herself to a sugar daddy website. Yeah. Ben, this
if you were a woman, Gascon, would you go to a sugar daddy website?
No.
You wouldn't?
No.
I would probably do it because there's a great value in that, and pretty much you can make a lot of money doing it, right?
Yeah, but why would you want to be caught? Because you could do this stuff online on your own, and there's so many different platforms to do it on.
But isn't that just prostitution? I mean, all this is prostitution. I mean, it's just saying it a different way.
Yeah, right? We're all paying for sex, right?
One way or another.
Of course we are.
Yeah.
So
I agree. So what happened with this particular woman? She's a teacher, is that?
Yeah, a teacher. And so she obviously joined this website to supplement her income as a preschool teacher. That's the worst part about it. But then she started going on dates. And then when she would go to school to take her kids to school, she began to see the guys that she would go on dates on at certain schools when she would drop off her kids.
Wow. That's how old is she?
She looks like she's in her mid-30s.
All right, so maybe she was in her late 20s or something like that when she did this, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, that's tough. I mean, they say you're not supposed to shit where you eat, right? Isn't that what they say there and all that? And
You sleep, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's... I know she's probably some nice candlelight dinners there and had a wonderful time, romantic songs and all that, and... lovey-dovey, but it's tough. I always had, when I was dating, most of my dates did not go well, and I was always worried that I would, run into one of these people. You know, I had this paranoia when I go out that I'd, run into someone I had dated, and it never happened. At least I don't recall it happening.
Well, yeah, how are you going to run into former dates in a movie theater? You can't see the other ones.
Wow. Wait, really?
That's what you said earlier.
Slobbering idiot. But no, I would go other places occasionally, but yeah, never. And I usually dated people that were far away from where I lived. That was intentional. Plus, I lived in the hood.
Yeah.
And I didn't want, you know, just, it was hard to meet people in the hood that you wanted to hang out with.
Were you a serial
as far
dater?
As dating. What's that?
Were you a serial dater? Like, did you date all the time?
No, no. It was hard to get dates. You know, when you're fat, it's hard to get dates. Women don't give you the time of day, so it's difficult. And plus, I worked in radio. I mean, those years, I was dating heavily. I was working overnight weekend radio.
Oh.
And imagine talking to someone online or something like that, and you're trying to go out with them, and you say, well, I'm available every day except Friday night and Saturday night. I'm not available.
The two nights.
I mean, what woman wouldn't jump at the opportunity wouldn't be persuaded to date a guy who's not available the two most popular nights of the week?
Yeah, I get that problem right now. Anyways, you can follow me on Twitter at David J. Gascon. Anyways.
Are you trying to get a date there? Don Juan over there, Prince Charming, huh? Yeah. Swipe right, Gascon.
Oh, man. Plenty of fish, right? Ben, we go from Florida to Dallas where the wife of a 72-year-old man in Dallas was charged with a fatal shooting of someone that he thought was a burglar, and he contacted the lawyers, he called 911 and whatnot. This guy was charged with murder after shooting somebody that he thought was a burglar. Bond was set at $150,000. According to the reports, the perpetrator came into the apartment building. He was shot, killed, and the man that shot him, after he was done, he went right back to bed.
Well, that's the definition of cold-blooded. So the guy's body was still in the...
Yes.
Right there?
Yes.
Was he dreaming? Was he, like, sleepwalking when he did this?
No, he just said...
No?
Florida to Dallas, Texas, you know, they have the gun laws and whatnot. People are a little gun-happy down in Lone Star State.
Well, right? I know that's the cliche, but wouldn't, like, being a human being... I'm not against... guns and all that. I know maybe that's not popular to say. I'm not anti-gun. I think there should be some restrictions on it. I don't think it should be like the Old West, but I'm fine with the right to bear arms and all that. But my God here, I mean, there are... If I killed somebody, I would have such guilt and such... Even if it was necessary, I would still be like, I took a life. I mean, I would feel horrible.
Yeah, speaking of which, you remember Ray Carruth, right?
Oh, yeah. He was behind the... the murder of his wife there.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I bring that up because this woman in Florida, her name's Jessie Lopez, she was in jail, facing felony charges of operating an unsanctioned weight loss clinic. Uh-huh. And then while she was in prison, she started talking to a couple cellmates and put a hit out for her husband at the time. And she got caught while she was doing that. She was a part of like this huge money laundering scheme, but they had officials and obviously undercover informants that were in there. And she was corresponding with a undercover police officer, going back and forth about putting a hit on her husband, making some phone calls through the communications that she gets on her one-time phone calls and whatnot. But
she was planning this from behind the prison wall.
Yes.
Right.
It's a very El Chapo-like.
What a dumb bitch. I mean, my God here, Gascon. This is an acid test for stupidity. Well, I mean, common sense. Common sense. That is profound ignorance, and that woman deserved to get caught and deserved whatever punishment she's going to get from this. I mean, Mike, I know you're not in your right mind when you're like, let's put a hit out on someone, but still, this is beyond ridiculous here.
Last one. Are you paper or plastic?
I am plastic, more of a plastic guy.
All right, yeah, so am I. I bring that up because the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, is making a little bit of history right now. The first major U.S. city right now in the United States to actually ban cashless stores. Now, there's a new bill that's out. It's supposed to go into effect during the summertime, but it was delayed. So now it's going to take part here in a couple of days. But basically, the bill prevents most retail locations from refusing to take cash. Now, it does not include parking garages, internet transactions, and wholesale clubs that operate on membership models, but it prevents them from charging people who use cash at a higher price than those who use cards. Now, people might think about, well, what does that all mean? It's simple. If you go to a gas station right now, just for example, I bought gas today. It was $4 a gallon, but if I use my credit card, it's $4.10. So if I go cash, it's $4. If I go with a credit card, it's $4.10. So
really, I thought it was cheaper with cash. I thought
Yes, it is. Cash is cheaper.
Maybe I misunderstood what you said, but I did. Yeah, so it is cheaper. Yeah, so they want the same. They want equality.
Yes. Cashless stores.
I will tell you that, you know, if you want to budget, I started budgeting about a year ago to try to get out of debt and pay off some stuff that I have built up, the great debt that I've built up in my life with my wife's as well in on this. But any book you read, any advice from like Dave Ramsey and those type of people, they tell you that envelopes, cash envelopes, you're supposed to put cash for your budget every week in an envelope and not spend any more than that budget. And you will actually get out of debt faster that way. So even though I use credit cards a lot because it's just easier than going to the bank and getting cash and all that, I understand. It is kind of ridiculous the way they set it up, where you get charged more one way than the other, and all that stuff.
You don't sock away 25% every pay period for your 401k.
25%?
25%, yes. You max out your 401k, Ben. What's wrong with you?
No.
Listen, you've taken some bad advice from a dentist that used to work here.
Television dentist,
who,
by
yes.
the way, during this podcast sent me several text messages. I want you to know he was texting me. Yeah.
Were they in sexual nature, or were they...
No, he listens to local radio in Los Angeles and then comments on the radio. Like when stuff happens that is just ridiculous, he'll tell me that, I can't believe I heard this on the radio, so-and-so said this. It's all people we know and people we work with over the years.
Was he critiquing their language or the way that they spoke, or even the words that they used in a report? He's known for that.
Yeah. He's a dick. I mean, he does all that stuff. Absolutely. So.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. So is that it? Put the ball on the baby, on the package or whatever, yes?
Yes,
put the
yes.
baby to bed, all those cliches, blah, 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 blah. All right. There it is, the fifth hour with Ben Maller. Thank you. If you love the podcast, boy, you really love it if you're still listening. just download it every week like you're doing right now. Subscribe. Tell a friend. That would help us out a lot. Give us a nice review. That would be pretty cool with vivid details how much the podcast has changed your life. The fifth hour with Ben Maller. Have a great weekend. Hopefully my tongue will actually heal by the time I get back on the radio. If not, I might actually have to take a sick day, which would be embarrassing next week. But have a great weekend, and thank you.